when I lost my daughter, the loss was so big that I really felt like it's gonna break me. Like, I might not come back from this. And it was only because I had people in my life that said, you grieve as much and as long as you need. And so Still Held, I created it as a space to say to these women, like, you grieve for as much and as long as you need. Yeah. If it is 10 years, if it is 20 years, like, come and grieve. But, like, let's do it together.
From Crossroads Media, this is See Hear Love with Melinda Esterbrooks,
Season 11,
Episode number 32.
Well, welcome to See Hear Love, and today's theme, Childless, Not by Choice, CNBC. A conversation of those who deeply desire children but are living without them due to infertility, health issues, pregnancy loss, infant loss, and life circumstances. And joining me today is Siobhan Koch, the founder of Still Held, a nonprofit creating spaces of support, community, and respite for women and families navigating infertility, pregnancy, loss, and infant loss, and after more than a decade of infertility, multiple losses, and the death of her daughter, Talitha, Siobhan began walking alongside others in the long, tender journey of grief and hope. And her work is rooted in honesty, faith, and the belief that no one should have to carry this kind of loss alone. She speaks, and you facilitate, and holding space for both deep sorrow and quiet resilience. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It already feels very tender as we go into this conversation about your story. So tell me about this journey of more than 10 years of infertility, tests, treatments, and unanswered prayers. What was that like?
Yeah, I knew from a young age that I wanted to be a mother, and not just a mother. I had a deep desire to be pregnant and to labor and birth a baby. And that's just something that has always been deeply rooted in me. And my husband and I, we got married in 2011. And about 2 years into our marriage, we decided it was time to start trying. And after about a year, we started to realize that it wasn't going to come as easily as maybe I had anticipated it might. And that began a journey of another 2 years of trying to find some medical answers and a diagnosis. It took 4 doctors and a lot of work and a lot of advocation on my part to find out what was wrong. Mm-hmm. And then we got a referral to a fertility specialist. And that began what would be a decade of treatments. It was, you know, a long time. And we did it all. We did cycle monitoring. We did IUI and IVF. And I think one of the hardest parts about infertility is that it is so personally invasive and yet so publicly private. No one really knows, you know, what you're going through. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of money, and the entire time you're kind of expected to continue on with life as if it's normal. Mm-hmm. But on the inside, there's so much grief, and, you know, each month you hope and you go through this cycle of waiting, and then you find out you're not pregnant. And we did that year after year for 10 years.
What was that like on your body and you know, your mental state, and also the relationship with your husband?
Yeah, it is. I mean, to be honest, it's traumatic. It is a traumatic experience on your body. I think after all those years, I'm still unpacking what that looks like. But one of the biggest things I learned is that, you know, that trauma, it is rewiring your brain in kind of a protection state to say, for so long I started to believe, you know, maybe this wasn't meant for me. Maybe this isn't going to happen. And it took, once I got pregnant, to then believe that this could happen and that this might actually come to be was so difficult, because we had spent all of those years having a no as the answer, you know? Yeah.
The stigma around infertility and fertility, I know that years before there always was, I know of people who, you know, went through fertility and they had babies and they won't talk about it. Is there still a stigma, or is there a bit more openness about it?
I think that it is getting better.
Okay.
But I still think there is a stigma around it. I started to share our story quite openly just a couple years into my journey. And then what I found was when I started to share, then other people came out of the woodwork and they started to share with me. But I think had I not been the one to kind of first openly share, I may never have heard those other stories. And then it becomes so isolating.
Yeah.
You really do feel like you're in it alone. You know, you sit in the waiting room with all the other women, but nobody talks to each other. And so you are surrounded in a room full of other people who are walking through the same thing, and yet still there's no conversation about it. And so it is, it's really lonely and really isolating.
So 10 years of infertility, these treatments and unanswered prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story of your miracle girl, Talitha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we, at year 10, we had done our IVF. Mm. And I was waiting to do, I had my egg retrieval done. I was waiting to do an embryo transfer. And all of a sudden, miracle of miracles, unassistedly, we got pregnant. And, you know, all those years of medical intervention and then to get pregnant with no medical intervention was truly a miracle for us. And my pregnancy was monitored closely by doctors because of my history, but everything was going so smoothly. Mm. And I had so much joy, and I loved being pregnant. And then on just an ordinary Monday, I wrapped up a Zoom meeting for work. And I bent down to pick something off the floor, and my water broke. And it was just a shock. It was far too early, and nothing I had even come close to anticipating. And so then I called my midwife, just hysterically crying, saying, you know, I don't know for sure, but I think my water is broken. So she said, you know, come into the hospital immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into labor and delivery, and that's when they confirmed it was amniotic fluid. And, my water had broken, which meant that most likely I was going to go into labor. And then we spent the next couple of days just medical professionals giving us the entire layout of what might happen. If she was born at 22 weeks, this is what it would look like. If she was born at 24 weeks, this is what it would look like. And even then, I still had hope because I'd heard stories of women who their water had broken and they made it a month or 2 months. And so I still kept praying, just begging God that we could prolong labor enough that she could make it outside of my body. And then on the third day, I went into labor, and my contractions, they came quick and heavy, and we had to rush to the hospital. And I remember getting into the car with my husband and just saying to him, you know, I feel like my body has failed us. Like my body has failed me. It has failed her. It just felt like such a betrayal after all these years to finally get pregnant and know like this was the end. And so each contraction just felt like I was just bringing her one step closer to heaven. And often when it comes to baby loss, people don't want to ask about a birth story. But for me, that story is my daughter's story. And I love it. Like, I love sharing it with people. And so we got to the hospital, and we had an incredible team of doctors and nurses who walked with us through this labor. And I had, you know, these nurses that held my hand beside me, and they cried with me. They knew, you know, every time they were asking me to push, they were asking me to bring my daughter closer to what would be her death, because she was alive inside and she was safe inside. And, you know, they were asking me to do what no mother should have to do. Yeah. To birth a baby and know that was the end. And so when she was born, we weren't sure that she would for sure be alive, and we found out she was. And as soon as the doctors realized she was alive, they put her on my chest, and then they left the room, and they let Timo and I parent her in the best way that we knew how. We just We gave her kisses. She was so tiny, and we held her in front of us. We told her that we loved her, and we christened her in our tears. And just with every ounce of love that we had, that we could muster in us, we ushered her into heaven and we said goodbye. And that marked just the beginning of a new person, like who I was before that loss. Like, she is gone. Grief changed me. Loss changed me. That kind of motherhood changed me. But it also, you know, it carved all of these new depths of pain and compassion and love in a way that I had never experienced.
Oh.
Yeah.
I need a little a moment here. To God, I mean, in moments like this, when we have loss like this.
Yeah.
What happens in the conversation with you and God?
I felt so betrayed, to be honest, because I believed with my innermost being that God could have healed me, that he could have prolonged labor. And so to really accept that he could and he didn't, early on in that really raw grief, it felt just like a betrayal, like, why bring me to this miracle pregnancy to not make it to the end, to not bring our daughter home? Like, that just felt like such a betrayal of hope and trust. Mm-hmm. And that tension is something that I have unpacked over the years, but will continually unpack probably for the rest of my life. And there's some mystery in it. That's what I've had to really come to understand, is there's no good answer right now, but I will live the rest of my life in the mystery of wondering why I couldn't keep her here.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful, honest answer.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the relationship that it feels with you and God. Mm-hmm. Those are real. Those are real feelings and things. Yeah. And he's not afraid of them.
No.
You know? And so you lose Talitha.
Yeah.
And then a rainbow baby.
Yeah, a rainbow baby. And so we tried getting pregnant for about a year after we lost Talitha. And then our rainbow baby, Silas, he came along. And people assume that as soon as you get pregnant after a loss, that it's all joy and all excitement. But to be honest, a lot of the joy was overshadowed by so much fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Because again, I had spent decades just learning that no was the answer, that my body just physically saying, like, no, a baby's not gonna come. And so there was a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, but also just a lot of trust. It was an exercise in trust to say, God, like, every day I had to wake up and say, today I know I have a healthy, living baby inside of me. And so if all I can do is make it through today, then that's enough. And then tomorrow will be tomorrow, and that will be tomorrow's problem. And that is day after day after day. That's how I made it through my pregnancy. And then he was born, and it felt like, you know, at that point it was 12 years since we had started trying when he was born. And it was just 12 years of emotion and 12 years of pain, like all of it just bundled up into this moment. They put him on my chest, and I just remember thinking, like, he's here. It just, you know, that the veil between heaven and earth, it felt so thin in that moment. And it just was utter peace of he's finally here. Yeah. Yeah.
And you've been through other losses. It's like...
Yeah.
You know, the depths of despair and loss to joy and and then loss.
Yeah. So we got pregnant, another surprise baby, when Silas was just over a year. And with that pregnancy, I knew, like, a couple of days after conception that I was pregnant. I could feel it, like, my intuition. I was like, oh, I am pregnant. And we got to experience the joy of that pregnancy from right very beginning. We shared it with our family, and honestly, I really went through that pregnancy quite confident because I thought, you know, for sure we have paid our dues. Like, it would be unfair for us to have to pay any more, you know? And then I went for my 11-week ultrasound, and it was the second ultrasound. The first had been fine. So I went for my 11-week ultrasound, and then I heard the words that no one wants to hear. There's no heartbeat. One of the hardest things about that loss, or most unique difficulties of that loss, was it actually took a week for us to get all of the medical appointments to confirm what was happening and get into a doctor. And my body did not realize he was gone. And so I didn't have a natural miscarriage. And for 1 week, I had to just walk around, participate in life as if everything was normal and as if everything was fine. And meanwhile, like, my womb had become a graveyard, and I just, it was devastatingly hard to just pretend like life was going on. And that is one of the things that I hear about so often with women, especially in early miscarriages, is the rest of the world doesn't know what's happening, and you're carrying this grief around that no one else is aware of, you know? And so after a week, we were able to get a medically induced miscarriage, and I birthed my teeny tiny baby at home. We named them Jude. And it, again, like, that loss changed me. It broke me in new ways. I thought that maybe a second loss might be easier because we've been there. Mm-hmm. We've done it before. And it was equally as heartbreaking. It, The thing, though, that I guess helped us to carry it is that we had those grief muscles. We had language and tools about how to grieve. We knew what it meant to walk through sorrow and to do it together. Yeah. My husband and I have done so much work on the therapy side and communication side. So to walk through that grief together became a little bit easier, but it's still so heartbreaking, you know? And no matter how small your baby is or how early the loss is, it is still a loss and it is still heartbreaking.
Two of your friends are going to join us. Joanna LaFleur, Executive Director of WordMay Digital, and Snight Litchmar, Registered Psychotherapist and National Speaker, and friends of Siobhan. So, Snight, I know you were sitting out here in the studio and have some things to ask and share with Siobhan.
Yeah. I think what stood out to me, Siobhan, as you were speaking, was the betrayal that you felt that you had from your body. And, I mean, share what you feel led, but what is your relationship with your body today?
Yeah, we're getting there. It is a day-by-day process, and there are so many layers of loss that we've experienced, you know, through infertility, through child loss. And so it's not just, oh, I don't trust my body in this area. It's just a lot of areas. And so it is probably going to be a lifelong process for me of learning to trust my body to do the thing I thought it would always do, you know?
Thank you for that honest answer.
You know, I've known you through all of this story, and something that I've always appreciated, you do this in many areas of your life, but I see it in this one. You're always finding those ways that this connects to other people. That, like, even if you're at the same step, or you're one step ahead, or you're learning from those a few steps ahead of you in processing and learning about, I don't mean steps ahead as in, and now I have a baby. I mean steps ahead in, like, the journey of wrestling this down. And so, you know, as if you don't have enough to do, you've started this in a more formal way now. This organization, like, why did you want to bring, I mean, you'll tell us about it, but why did you want to do this and bring other women along? What were you seeing around you? You're saying you're sitting in those in those fertility clinics and you see all these faces, but you don't know them.
Yeah. So I started Still Held as a space to just hold room for women who are walking through infertility, pregnancy, baby loss, and infant loss. And really, it came out of a place of isolation that I felt so lonely in this loss. It is a grief like no other grief that, you know, really only someone who has walked through that grief can fully understand what it is like. Mm-hmm. And moms who have lived in this arena have been my saving grace over the years. And I have learned so much from them. And I have been able to connect with them so quickly. And so that has been such a gift for me in my journey of loss that I wanted to be able to offer that to other women. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it just, it's been healing in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It has been a labor of love, but it has been somewhere tangible to put my grief.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's really, you're speaking to a gap in our culture, because let's be honest, there's a culture where women are, there's a group of women that are childless by choice. Mm-hmm. You know, women have autonomy and power more than ever before over their bodily choices. But then you have that other group of women who would do anything to have a child. I wonder how that impacts women who yearn for, to be a mother. How does that impact their ability to grieve and to also share that grief in their relationships?
Yeah. I really think, you know, infertility is a grief with no graveyard to go visit. It is so invisible. And yet, especially in those years where you're trying, it is a grief month after month after month. And there's just so much trauma around it. And so it can be hard. You know, I remember in the early years, especially, watching all of our friends and family get pregnant, and they had pregnancy announcements. And there we were feeling left behind. And I had to learn how to genuinely feel joy for them so that it didn't ruin my relationship, while also feeling deeply sad for me. And that was a really painful tension to live in, you know?
Relationship with God.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier, as you heard about, you know, it felt like a betrayal. It felt like, and I know there's some people that are still there, very angry at God, blaming God about what's happened.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that process. How do we get to like a real, honest relationship with God in the midst of this?
So for me, one of the things that I did was ask God for a new picture of who he was. Because the God that I knew before, I wasn't connecting with him. I didn't know how to talk to him. Actually, there were close to a year where I couldn't pray. I needed liturgies. It was the only thing, the language of other people was the only way that I could pray, because I just felt so hurt in my relationship. And then I asked God for a new picture of himself, and so quickly he gave me this beautiful image of Aslan in The Magician's Nephew, where Diggory is begging him to heal his mother because she's sick and she's dying. And Aslan looks down at Diggory and has the biggest tears. And that's when Diggory realizes, like, Aslan's pain is bigger than his own. And so for me, when I could realize, like, God's grief for my loss was bigger than my grief. And that helped me move to understanding, actually, like, I wasn't angry at God. I was angry at death. And God's angry at death, you know? Like, death is a violation. And Jesus experienced and walked through that violation. And it is a rupture in the order of what was to be. And when I could move my anger from God to death, that was the turning point. And then I actually made a list. I made a list of all of the things that death would not take from us. And so I said, death has taken my daughter, but it will not take my marriage. It will not take my friendships. It will not take joy of the next pregnancy. And it will not take away my hope. And then I literally, the year after we lost my daughter, which was like an unraveling of myself, I spent with that list in front of me, like mm-hmm. just crossing it off, like, death, you will not steal yeah. this. You will not take this. And that was a turning point for me and my relationship with God.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm like... That's powerful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that can be on so many levels of so mm-hmm. many parts of our life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're all emotion and we all have our own story. Yeah. But again, we have this human experience, and that's, I think, the emotion that you're describing that I think everyone is resonating with who's tuning into this right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. And what I love about your story, Siobhan, is your ability to make space to grieve. And as someone watching your story from the outside, sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable witnessing that. Mm-hmm. And so can you share, how does Still Held create space for women to grieve?
Yeah. When I lost my daughter, the loss was so big that I really felt like it's gonna break me. Like I might not come back from this. And it was only because I had people in my life that said, you grieve as much and as long as you need. And so Still Held, I created it as a space to say to these women, like, you grieve for as much and as long as you need. Yeah. If it is 10 years, if it is 20 years, like, come and grieve. But, like, let's do it together. Mm-hmm. Because there's power when we come together and we don't isolate ourselves mm-hmm. from others who are walking through the same loneliness and the same grief and the same pain. Like, there's power in being together.
Something that you've said, because we're friends, I've heard you say this before, that you found like there was spaces where there wasn't something for that woman. Yeah. Meaning like there's different kinds of grief in this area of Childless Not By Choice. And mm-hmm. you felt like there were some women that, you know, maybe could you say just a few of the categories of women you're hoping that it's for?
Yeah, so we really want to serve, you know, one of the things that we are doing is offering retreats and space to actually be together in our grief. And so one of the first retreats that we're offering is for women who have walked through infertility and loss and are still childless because it's lonely and it's hard. And so that is a space, but also for moms who have walked through that kind of loss yeah. of a baby loss at any point in, you know, in yeah. their grief. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much information at stillheld.org. Yeah. Wow, thank you, Siobhan, Sinead, and Joanna, for this deeply, deeply meaningful conversation. Join us at seeherlove.com for all the information.
The Bible can feel overwhelming, confusing, or hard to believe. Scripture Untangled, a new podcast by the Canadian Bible Society, brings you interviews with culture leaders, leaders in ministry, and Bible thinkers to help you be inspired to dive into the Bible and understand it. Listen for free and subscribe to Scripture Untangled on your preferred podcast app. Visit scriptureuntangled.ca for more information.
Thank you for joining See Here Love with Melinda Esterbrooks. This podcast is a Crossroads Media production. Until next time, always remember, you are seen, you are heard, and you are loved by God.